Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the man's shit. Let's go hook him up!
Cody Rhodes is when he bagged Kermit and Kermit fucking sold it.
Yeah, I mean, he's the, for a green guy, he's the best seller I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's true.
I just like, and one thing that always makes me laugh is like when Kelly comes out and kisses Kermit. I love when Miss Piggy always gets that, she tucked her snout in just like she's so appalled by what she's seeing.
I know, and she just gives that deadpan stare right into the camera like, what the fuck? I marked out for that whole first segment. That whole segment. And Go ahead. Well, I was going to say, okay. I don't give a fuck what Brian says. I know he's full of shit. I know he secretly loves the midgets. He's just the type of person that he has never, ever in his life been able to admit when he is wrong, and he refuses to admit when he's wrong. But I know he likes the Muppets. And if he didn't like the Muppets, then Brian Howard, you are a sad, sad, sad little man. Which, you are a little man, but you're sad.
Yeah, I see people saying, well, like you're saying, like, Dolph Ziggler had to talk to a puppet. It's a big deal. I mean, I don't care much about that. I know the Muppets aren't real. I don't care that Dolph Ziggler is, like, interacting with them like they're a real person. That's like, part of the gag. It's the Muppets. You can do that kind of shit. That's the rules.
Yeah. It's wrestling. I mean, you had Pepe and, you're talking about a sport that had Pepe and Moppy and it had, yeah. Fucking the Steiner sold for Chucky, goddammit. I mean, fuck. You know?
Rick Steiner talked to his hand.
Fucking Steve Robocop teamed up, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I just don't take this shit too seriously anymore to where it bothers me that something like that happens, especially when it's like the Muppets who were actually like, I mean, I don't care what anybody thinks. Muppets are a big deal, so.
Yeah, I mean, just because they're, you know, they're not what they were when we were, like, kids, but, I mean, it's still the Muppets. I mean, that show, as shitty as everything else but the Muppets was on that show, I was a happy camper when that show was over.
Yeah, I mean, just for the Muppets, I mean, the rest of the show was, like, one of the worst book shows I've ever seen, but it was, with the Muppets, I was fine with it, and like I said, I don't take this shit so seriously where I get mad anymore. I just kind of go with it. Nothing really bothers me in wrestling anymore, so I don't care.
Yeah. Now, we actually are getting another caller on the line here, so let me see who that is. Caller calling from area code 302, who's this?
It ain't a Briscoe, so you know who it is.
Okay, we are joined. Since Craig isn't here, we got someone else to take his place, and of course we said sure got that jerk Ship. So how you doing, Ship?
Not bad. See, all those nice, like, you know, begging instant messages and emails and everything else you sent me, I decided to find my liberal side and to take you up on your offer of $500 an appearance. So Ed, thank you very much.
Maybe more like 5 cents, but we are actually going to get to the topic that we never got to last week, and where everybody got a little, well, not everybody, but a few people got a little upset that we didn't change the description, so we're going to go ahead and start.
Real quick, let's get Mike's thoughts on the Muppets while we were talking about it.
Oh, yeah, that'll work.
Highly disappointed. It's one of those things, Brian and I talked about on Observer Live, because he was obviously very down on the whole thing, and you know what, when you look at it from a wrestling point of view or a business point of view, you should be. With that said, if they're going to keep shoveling crap week after week after week, you know, when they do something like this, I'll chuck my brain and at least hope the Muppets are funny. Is it good for business? No. Is it good for anything? No. If times were good and they did a show like this, absolutely, it would be fine if there, you know, was the interaction was done differently. But, frankly, I was not going to let them. They want to do something stupid and goofy? No problem. I'll go with the stupid goofiness. And really what I came away from it thinking the most was I really don't like the new Waldorf and Statler voices.
Oh, God, they were horrible.
They really were bad.
Yeah, out of everything, I got to say they were kind of a disappointment. But as far as everything else, I loved everything else.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I liked Dolph's interaction. I don't bitch about that. It's just, if he was in a better spot leading into this, or if he had any confidence that he'd be better off, after it, okay, but yeah, you know, the fact that this is so awful, well, no, it's not. It's just a bump on a click of what hasn't been very good for a while now.
Yeah, that was like one of the worst book shows I've ever seen. I mean, the Muppets, aside from the Muppets, you know, just up and down the show.
It's so painfully, it's so painful. And I know they had that new batch of soap opera writers or whatever it is, and this, that, and the other. I mean, I can't, if something's clicking, it's certainly not to me. And when you have so many people in the general public that are, when they can point out, when your average fan, not one of us or somebody listening to this, but when the average person is pointing out so many holes, and it's so obvious to them, and it's not fun for them, then, you know, that's the sign, and they just, they're not seeing it, they don't care about it, whatever, you know, the aloofness, arrogance, whatever it is. It's, I mean, it's going on a couple of years, I mean, it's a while now. You know, talk about Les Thatcher, and I think he talked about it on your show. How about The Rock leading into WrestleMania, how impotent he made John Cena, how forgotten about Miz was, but he at least had this. They have announced the match for the next year, and when WWE historically thinks things out long term, they do a hell of a job, and they've fucked up The Rock. It's just you just got to shake your head, you know, because at the end of the day, they can make fun of Boss and say, you know, Kevin Nash coming out and saying, well, you know, the newsletters only know part of the story. I didn't even realize how bad this was. Oh, come on, Kevin, you worked in WCW for a long time, and you're not fooling anybody. Yes, you're towing the company line. And that's fine. I expect you to do that, but it's just not good. And it's your money, and if you want to throw it away like that, fine, but you're not building anybody. I mean, look at this show. You talk about stuff from 20 years ago and things that are vivid and things you remember. What kind of fans are they building now? They're not.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. But I do have to ask you a question of one of the statements I made before you came on the line is, if you look at every single performer in the WWE locker room, none of them come close to selling as good as Kermit the Frog, and I'm sure you have to agree with me on that.
You know what? I'm not going – there was no Daniel Bryan, so I'm not going to disagree. Kermit's always been good. He's always been able to show emotion. You know, he'll crunch up the top lip. And it's something as simple as that, the arms waving in the air. There's something as simple as that that guys can actually learn from.
Yeah, and I don't right. think, you know, I think like Brian and Vinny or maybe just Brian was saying, it doesn't sound the same as Kermit, as like Jim Henson. I didn't really notice any difference, to be honest with you.
His was a lot closer. Plus, Kermit's been out there. I mean, Henson died a long time ago. So, you know, when you've seen Kermit doing, like, I think it's MetLife, there was a commercial there, so I'm kind of more used to his voice, where it did surprise me with some of the others, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, and Statler and Waldorf, plus the material they gave him Monday was just, like, wretched to work with.
Oh, and it's so embarrassing, because they bury their own thing. I mean, it's like, the line's written, and if everything was popping, and Cole was great and all this stuff, it probably would have been kind of funny, but the problem is when the show is boring and it sucks and nobody wants to listen to Cole as an announcer anymore anyway, it's just like, well, that just kind of stated the obvious. And the Muppet did it at that.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you know, somebody put this Statler and Waldorf clip on the board the other day. And I just had to download it I'm going to play it here just to get the bad thoughts out of my head from Statler and Waldorf from Monday Night. So here we go.
In the golden age of television, our guest star earned the title of Mr. Television, and he deserves it to this day. Here he is, the incomparable Milton Berle.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, and good evening. And I want to thank you, Kermit. Thank you for your wonderful introduction. First time I've ever been introduced by an amphibious MC. Because you know what amphibious means. It means he can be dull on land or water. I feel great. I feel wonderful. I just got back from a pleasure trip. I took my mother-in-law to the airport. And while I was there...
Funny!
I heard about them. It's beginning. You're the two guys that I heard about that heckle from the box, aren't you? There they are, ladies and gentlemen. Get a look at them. Starsky and Crutch. Yeah, don't start with me, boys.
Hey, Burl.
What?
You know what? I've what? Just figured out your style.
Really?
You work like Gregory Peck.
Gregory Peck's not a comedian.
Well?
Now, just a minute, please. I have been a successful comedian half of my life.
How come we got this half?
Look, did you come in here to be entertained or not?
That's right.
What's right?
We came in here to be entertained, and we're not.
Yeah? I'd like to see you come down here and be funny.
You first!
The audience. Don't pay any attention to him, folks. He's the ninth child of a family of eight. Let me tell this story.
Hey, Burl!
Oh, yes, what is it? What is it?
You know what you're doing wrong?
What am I doing wrong?
You're standing too close to the audience.
Oh, yeah? How's this?
You're still too close.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this okay?
Yeah, a little more.
How far back do I want to go?
You got a car?
Let me tell you something. If you don't stop, I'll have the usher throw you out.
He can't. He's too busy.
Doing what?
Keeping people in.
And you're encouraging. You know what? I got a good mind to punch you in your nose.
Please, not while I'm holding it.
That's pretty funny.
You can use it.
I don't need your material, pal. I got a million funny lines in the back of my head.
Yeah, how come they never reach your mouth?
Gentlemen, would you please? Would you take it easy? Do you think I'm doing this for fun?
Not so far.
Oh, I see. You think you can do better?
I couldn't do worse.
All right. Okay. I dare you both to come down here and entertain.
We should.
Oh, yeah? Do you sing?
No.
Do you dance?
No.
Can you get laughs?
No.
Then what would you do?
Just what you're doing.
Okay, that's it. That's it. I'm going to call the police.
Good idea. You need all the protection you can get.
Don't, will you? I've had it with you guys. I'm not going to put up with you anymore. Anymore. Not anymore.
Hey, how's it going, Mr. Burrus?
Oh, I'm going to start with you now. How's it going? It's gone terribly. These guys have been picking on me and insulting me ever since I started.
Well, can I help you out?
Please, huh?
Which way did you come in?
I've had it. Here we go again.
That was pretty awesome.
I had somebody put that on the board the other day, and I had seen it before, but I hadn't seen it in like probably 25 years or something like that. And I've watched it like 10 times since somebody put it up. I had to post it here so we listen to it. That was awesome.
It's amazing. When I had my kid, I've watched the Muppet Show, and I don't know if y'all remember DC Follies and. You know, I loved a lot of the shows like that, but it's like, you know, I hadn't really thought about it until I had my kid, and then I just saw the DVD of the first season of The Muppet Show a few months ago, and I had to actually pick it up and buy it, and it was amazing watching, because obviously a lot of it's dated, but how a lot of that stuff still actually holds up.
Yeah. Especially like when I was going to be on, the Muppet movie, Muppet State Manhattan. The Great Muppet Caper, and watched them again. Loved them.
I always loved those movies too because it takes me back to being a kid. And I can't remember if it was Burger King or McDonald's. I think it was Burger King or McDonald's, where they actually would give away good shit at these places, and you got these big ass glasses, these big tumblers that were these big thick 24 ounce things. I mean, they were big ass nice glasses that you used to get with like the Happy Meal, and it was just like. I can actually remember being in the car, and it was just like, well, this is really cool.
Yeah, I remember they would do stuff like that with, I don't know, like a Star Wars movie or somebody like something like that, you know, have the big glass.
The Bugs Bunny. I got like a bunch of Bugs Bunny ones like that. But we'll go ahead and get to our real topic of the show, and we'll go ahead and start that off with a clip, so. Here's another little break for everybody.
A lot of things in my life have changed. You know, Brett, thought you respected me. And there were times I couldn't stand the sight of you. I know. I know the feeling is more than usual. But you know something, Brett? I've been carrying this around for 12 years. You're not the only one that's ready to move on. You're not the only one that wants to bury the hatchet. I guess all I have to say is, are you sure? And are you ready?
Well, let's be real honest. You weren't the easiest guy in the world to love either back then. And you're a guy that certainly had his issues. But you're right. My career and your career shouldn't always be tagged by what happened at Survivor Series. I had a great career. You've had a great career. We both accomplished so many things. I think it's as good a time as any right here and now for you and me to take this opportunity in front of all these fans right here in Dayton and all around the world. Look each other in the eye. Take this moment and say that we could be friends. So I offer my hand to you in friendship. Right here in front of everybody. Take from the heart. Take from the bottom of my heart. I call for a truce. And I call for you to shake my hand, and if you want to bury the hatchet, let's bury it right now.
So anyway, we're talking about we're actually going to review and talk about the Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels DVD that just came out. And Contreras, you just finally got to see it since you missed it last week. What did you think of the DVD?
Real quick, the best part of that whole clip is when the fans are talking or screaming while somebody's talking, and the old woman says, "Shut up and let the man speak." you heard that part in there. But yeah, this was an awesome DVD. I finally got to watch it on Tuesday, and I don't know, it was kind of like that Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, you know, when they first met, you know, when they were in the ring together in that January 2010. It was kind of like a surreal thing sitting there, see them sitting there talking about this, and it's kind of like vindication for Bret Hart, because it was pretty much like the Bret Hart vindication show, because he wasn't really painted as any type of bad guy, and Shawn Michaels pretty much owed up to everything bad that he did, you know, during that time period. He didn't really deny anything.
No, I've only seen a little bit of it, because I didn't know it was going to be on the night till short notice, but I had seen a little bit of it this week, but I had also just randomly had watched the documentary portion of the Bret Hart Hitman 3 DVD disc set. I went back and for just some reason I decided to watch the documentary on that, and one thing I like about this one, and what I like about that one, and when they do these types of things, when you actually let the guy tell the real other side of the story, and WWE has their thing, but when they actually, because it's amazing, when I'm sitting there and it's like watching both of them, they were going to come out with a DVD to bury Bret 975 fucking feet under the ground.
Yeah.
And instead, you know, we've gotten to the point where we've gotten this, and it's like, I wish WWE would do more of this. I know how they love burying people, but again, they prided themselves on, you know, they wanted to become the only game in town. They did that. They can always tell their story, and they can always downplay somebody else's. But when you bring them on and actually do what they've done with Shawn and Bret, and having Jim Ross there, who, again, you could get nobody else to mediate this thing that would make any sense, except for him, unless it's somebody like Vince. But even then, you couldn't include him because he's an active participant. It's just, it's so good, and that's why this one's going to sell so well, and why it's going to be so well respected, is because they're letting the truth out there, and they can always spin shit later on their, and they have a million and one ways and outlets to do it. When they do stuff like this, that's what makes that shit the best, and that's why people like it and why it's going to sell the best.
Yeah, and also because you know that the issues with these guys, it's real. It's not a bunch of bullshit. You know, these guys really hated each other.
Yeah, and they know, first of all, for the, I mean, you know, for the future, it's good because it sets the record straight with all the other DVDs and things that they have done in the past. You know, bring it with the Confidential, if you, you know, and all that sort of stuff that they've done in the past that you forget about. And for, you know, I got the impression, too, watching it, they know that you know, watching it, what the story is. So now you're just going to be able to hear it through their filter and through these guys' mouths. And they did a good job. You sort of, they, I mean, I think out of figure, most of the people that have watched it, they either know enough about the story or are Observer subscribers and really know the story. So, I mean, I got again, it was, I've only watched a little of it, but I've gotten a good impression about that. I just get the feeling they know that you know. And that's what I like about some of the 24/7s that don't have Michael Hayes and stuff like that, when because of that reason.
Yeah, they really did a good job on this one of, like, really telling the truth and not really, like, holding back at all. So I guess we could kind of, like, start off, like, from the beginning, because the DVD actually starts off when they were actually talking about when they were still in the tag team, and you know, they start off talking about the Hart Foundation and the Rockers coming in, and the part that I found the most interesting is when Shawn Michaels talks about how no one really wanted to work with them because they were so little, even though that they would probably be the team to make every single one of the other teams look good. It's like, it's kind of like, I mean, it's just so weird to me that no one would want to work with them. But the fact they would have to know they were going over because the Rockers were so small anyway.
The Rockers were kind of cursed because they were smaller, but they were so good as a team that eventually for several years, they were just the guys to go out there and make other people look good instead of actually getting a good push in the company, you know, because they just make everybody look so good.
Yeah, and it surprised me because, you know, they showed – you know, the Killer Bees, and they talked about the Killer Bees, and it's like, well, that was, you know, a lot of people forget they were never the WWF Tag Team Champions. You know, they were there, and their job was obviously smaller guys, so it kind of surprised me. It was like people didn't want to work with them. I don't think it wasn't that people wanted to work with them, but I would assume that the Warlord and the Barbarian would have went, you know, no, we're not going to do the job for them, which they shouldn't be surprised about. I thought that was a little bit overblown because, you know, the Rougeaus, there have been, you know, the smaller tag teams there. You're just obviously not going to be, you know, unless you were Blanchard and Anderson, you weren't going to be in that mix. But that's kind of, you know, and again, how everything changed, but that's kind of, you know, tough there. But I thought that was a little bit overstated by him.
Yeah, and
yeah,
also
it's not
they
like
talked
Anvil
about,
and Brett were big.
Yeah, and they talked about, you know, the like Vince or whoever was putting the shows together, Johnny started letting them close the show, but they kind of left out that really one of the main reasons they did that, like on the house show, was because they'd have the main event in the middle of the show so they could announce like a rematch for like the next month. When they would do like shots in like Madison Square Garden, I think like every month or every other month, and the same in like Philadelphia and Boston and stuff like that. And that's one probably the main reason they ended up closing those shows was so they could have the main event in the middle of the show and announce a rematch the next month.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I remember that all the time. It's the Baltimore Arena, because you work in the Civic Center. You always knew when to time it, if you were from that era, to either know somebody to get the tickets, to know when to leave the match, you know, because they say they're going to announce them and go on field during intermission and all that sort of stuff. So you knew about that. Plus, it's like, you know, the Midnight Express and the Rock and Roll Express, I remember a lot of times guys would be in the middle because, well, wrestlers wanted to go leave and go somewhere else, or, you know, to get out of there. It happened a lot with, like, Bruno in New York and stuff like that, where it was just, it was set up so those guys wouldn't have to catch late flights and do all that sort of stuff. And, you know, unfortunately, the best workers of the bunch got the short end of the stick, unless it was a flair match.
Yeah, or else they, you know, they sometimes they had, like, a Hulk Hogan match in the middle of the show so he could catch a flight and make another shot they were having the same night, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so and it's always good for the fans because, you know, like I say, they get to see the main event and they get to hear about the rematch and get excited, but plus they also get to leave by watching a good match also.
And it also makes you sad because, my God, tag team wrestling these days is just really shit if you think about it. I mean, when you look back at the division, like back in the late 80s,
with all those awesome teams that they were talking about, the Rockers, Art Foundation, Demolition, the Bulldogs, Rougeaux, all those guys. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what tag, I know people will say Air Boom, but let's be honest, they just threw them together because they had nothing else to do with them. I mean, what other real tag team do they have besides the Usos?
They don't even care enough about the tag team titles. Take it off a guy that got suspended.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and guys, and the worst, shittiest part is, everybody listening already knows this, you know, tag teams were put together for purpose, and they wrestled guys for purpose to bring up a young guy teaming with an older guy, to have a contrast in styles, to have two guys, you know, four guys work together who need to work on different things. Because if you think about it, like, Bourne, Kofi, Swagger, and Dolph could all serve working together for a good program because, you know, Dolph and Kofi have wrestled each other a lot. In fact, they've wrestled each other so much that they go through the motions sometimes, which drives guys like Les nuts. It drives guys like me nuts, too, because it's like you're being lazy. Now, I know you're giving shit, but there's no reason not to lock on the headlock and have professional pride and things like that. But, you know, Dolph's pretty damn good, but he just needs to work a little bit more on, you know, kind of crowd things and things like that. But he's almost there. He can help Evan with that. Evan's a great athlete. He needs to work on his wrestling more. You have Swagger there for that. Yeah, it's just all, you know, Swagger needs to connect with the crowd better. Kofi does a great job of that. Have them working together and have them, you know, these guys doing these things. You got so many people on the goddamn roster. Utilize them for what tag teams were because, I mean, for Christ's sakes, look at Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and, you know, all of those. Look at all those great teams. Plus, it's still, it's not a dead thing, and I don't know what it is with New York. I just don't get it. They always loved the Road Warriors when they came to town. They always liked tag teams. I don't know what it is with the mentality of tag teams are useless. Tag teams gave us this DVD we're talking about.
Yeah, and then, I mean, and then just not even that long ago, they made a lot of money off of the Hardys, Dudleys, and Edge and Christian.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It was like last great feud in the tag team division.
Yeah, when they try to kill something, WCW did, when they try to kill this shit, and they do it, and then these guys have great matches, and all of a sudden they have renewed interest again. SmackDown was the same way with the Guerreros and Edge and Ray and who am I forgetting? Benoit and,
Angle.
Yeah, and Angle, yeah, I mean, it's just every time you try to get Saturn and Malenko and the West Texas Rednecks, even in WCW, as shitty as that whole thing was, every time you try to kill it, people still like it because, I mean, again, a great tag team match is great. Again, I'm biased towards tag teams, and I grew up loving tag teams and, you know, the Crockett Cup and all that sort of stuff. But it's still, I mean, it's just like telling any story, except you got four guys who can be really goddamn good at it or some guys that give them some purpose, some ring savvy, some sense, because you're calling them up too fast anyway. Can you imagine what a Wade Barrett-Cody team would have been? Like, right off the bat, you know, if they put some damn thought into it, it just, things like that just drive you nuts about them.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Brett and Shawn, you know, two guys that were, I mean, Brett came in 1994 and they started the Hart Foundation, and, you know, they spent about 7 years as a team, and Shawn and Marty were together from, I don't know what, like maybe 1985 until 1991. And, I mean, and then, you know, out of that, Shawn and Brett became like, probably the two best in-ring performers that the company ever had, in my opinion.
And the thing is, even before and he didn't just come straight into the Hart Foundation. He was actually a jobber for like a few months there.
Yeah.
You know, the babyface jobber, and then he kind of like started to get like a rougher edge, and then they put him into the Hart Foundation. But he was actually, I remember him being squashed a few times very early on. You know, I have a lot of respect for Brett because he literally came from the bottom and worked his way straight up to the top. And, you know, it's almost impossible to do that now.
Yeah, I mean, you won't find anybody as shocked as I was that weekend he came out with I think it was like October 92 and had just won the WWF title. I said, holy shit. You know, because guys like him weren't winning the title back then. So I was shocked.
No, not yet. Not up there. I mean, again, even when there was a honky-tonk man or somebody like that, I mean, it was just a surprise. But again, I also had linked Brett to tag teams for so long, too. It was almost, it was amazing to watch The Ascension, but it was like, that's how you do it. I mean, that's how you do it. It's like Ricky Morton is a great example of this, too. You know, why was he, it's like, why does he still have people giving him money now? It's because he teamed with, who did he team with in San Antonio? Is Ken Lucas down there?
Yeah, I remember that.
I mean, he was good with Kenny Lucas. I mean, with Robert Gibson for years in Mid-South. I mean, he traveled around and did this stuff, and that's what they did, too. And it just, look at the performers that they became. And Brett was so, obviously, Brett had the pedigree anyway. He was so sound, but he was able to take the ball when it was time to break and run with it. I mean, Shawn Michaels, nobody remembers WrestleMania 7 or whatever it was when Hulk Hogan, you know, was angry at somebody, or I think it was WrestleMania, I can't remember. He's pissed off, he's angry, and you know, he's backstage, and Shawn Michaels is there. I don't know, Hulk, I don't know. And Hulk throws him into the lockers, and nobody remembers that about Shawn Michaels now because of, you know, because of this body of work that he was able to put together, the Sherry stuff and all that stuff, which at the time it was like, you know, being young then, I'm like, well, they're pushing them, but it's just something feels weird about this. But, you know, damn, he was the right guy.
Yeah, I think there was that was when the Macho Man turned on him on the main event. He was stalking around backstage and throwing people up against the wall and shit like that.
Where is he, brother?
After he made sure Elizabeth was still alive after she took that big bump from the Macho Man.
Hey, guys, we actually got a caller here, so I'm going to go ahead and put him on the line here for a few minutes. Caller from area code 615. Who's this?
Hello, Ed in San Antonio. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
This is Trent Van Dries.
615.
Hello, Semper Vivi. Every time you and Ed are together, it rocks my world.
Mr. Van Dries, we're only doing this. We're only doing this out of respect to you and your return to the airways and keeping everyone, letting everyone know what's going on with Ohio Valley Wrestling, which I'm getting the feeling is kind of getting a little bit of a revival. Not exactly the old Cornette days, but it's feeling pretty good.
And that's all thanks to me. But I've got a question for all you gentlemen, something that just struck me. Who do you think was the better tag team wrestler, Bret Hart or Shawn Michaels?
Bret Hart.
Really?
Bret Hart, yeah.
Why? I go with Shawn Michaels.
I don't know who wants to start. I'll get my blowhard ass out of the way here. I just think Bret Hart was because it was how he had to compliment Jim Neidhart. And again, it's different pedigree. I mean, I respect Shawn Michaels more for what he was able to do. And because I don't think he wasn't in too many tag teams. He was in a couple of situations, but you know, but before he joined up with the Rockers or in Central States or wherever they actually had done it for the first time, I think I respect him more for his ascension through it, but I think Bret was better because he knew he could not talk. He was not the greatest looking guy in the world, wasn't the biggest or any of that stuff, but had his technique and knew how to play his technique off an obnoxious manager and how to carry himself. And I think in his role with the Hart Foundation, you put somebody else there, not so much. I think if you put someone comparable, and that's unfair to say, but at the time comparable to a Shawn Michaels next to Marty Jannetty, again, as long as they were better looking than Marty, as long as they could keep up with him, as long as they had more flash and athleticism and pizzazz than him, I think it would have fit. I think it fit better. I think if you put somebody else with Jim Neidhart, he's such an overbearing personality, and he's either a guy you liked or you didn't like. And he could be grating, and he could overtake guys. I think Bret was perfect to kind of feel his ebbs and flows, whether he had known him for a long time before that. And I don't think he had, really. I think all the Neidhart's relationship was a little bit in Calgary, but I think came a little bit later on. I think he fit that situation better just than Michaels did with Jenny. I think Michaels was just a little bit more replaceable.
I think that the Rockers had, you know, the more flamboyant, like, tag team moves and, you know, the flashier stuff. But to me, Bret was just, he made his team, everything, they were just smoother. Everything was just smoother. I mean, it was not as flashy, but everything they did was just real tight and almost perfect. And I just think he just, I don't know, I just think he, like Shiv said, he did more for the team than, say, Shawn did for the Rockers. to me, the Rockers were more equal than, say, Brett and Enzo were.
Yeah, I'd say Shawn Michaels just because, I don't know, just because I hate when, you know, you have tag teams and they don't, and it's not built like on tag team work. And I'm not saying the Hart Foundation wasn't, but I just think, like, the tag team work with Shawn and Marty was more innovative, and they had a lot better tag team maneuvers and stuff like that. That's why I thought Shawn was a better tag team wrestler.
And you know what hurt him, too, and it's a point for Cotrera on this. You know, you think of the Midnight Rockers feud, and you go, outside of Buddy Rose and Doug Summers in the AWA, where they were, you know, before they were thrown into the big time, well, twice after they got fired after a day in WWF. But, you know, I think their other feud, and I correct me if I'm wrong, guys, if you remember, I think it was Sold at Houston off in, like, Borsukov.
Yes.
I think that may have been it. And then they go in and they're in the frying pan in WWF. And, I mean, again, they just did not have the pedigree Bret Hart did, too, which you got to give both of them, especially, you know, in a way, Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest feud that the Rockers had, I think, I mean, obviously, aside from Buddy Rose and Doug Summers, I think that's probably the most well-known and famous one. But I think maybe the best one I had was with Arn and Tully, and they were doing all those matches. Like in
I wouldn't even call it a feud. They just had, like, a program. It was never, like, a real feud.
The thing where they would have, like, a match set for TV, and, you know, it'd be a big brawl, and the match never got started, and they come back in a couple of weeks, and the same thing had happened. Then they go to, like, Saturday night's main event and have just, like, an awesome match. That's kind of what I meant. They never really had a feud. I mean, they had a feud, like, with the Rougeaus and with Power and Glory, but they never lasted long.
You know, I've never been the hugest Bret Hart fan, but to me, when you really think about it, it's actually kind of amazing that Bret and Shawn both went as far as they did, because neither guy would have ever been the prototypical world champion back in the day.
Yeah.
Several issues.
No way.
The fact that they both went that far. I just got the DVD. I haven't actually watched it. I just got it. But would you guys say that, like, overall, like, Bret Hart was, like, 90% right and everybody else was wrong? Would you agree with that? And of course, Bret Hart's so damn whiny, he kind of pisses me off. Would you say Bret was almost totally in the right?
I would say that.
Well, when you hear, like, what it's basically, like, I had always thought Bret was in the right before I watched the DVD, and I still think he was more in the right, but you kind of get, like, a little more of where Shawn's coming from, but still, like, as far as what happened at Survivor Series, to me, Bret was, for the most part, in the right, because, you know, I just think he was more in the right. What do you think, Katrina?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, when you see the DVD and see, Shawn owns up to a lot of the stuff, you know, like, saying, you know, Bret saying he's saying he'll be glad to put him over, but, you know, Shawn says, well, I'm not going to do the same for you. And Shawn kind of says, like, he says, I don't remember it that way, but at that time, that's something I probably would have said. And so, yeah, Bret was a little bit more in the right. Shawn Michaels just kind of, it was kind of like, I kind of feel bad for Shawn in a way, because they're bringing up all the stuff that's true, and he's just kind of, you know, sitting there, kind of like a kid that's been sent to the principal's office, and they're talking to his parents right in front of him, and they've done something bad, and said, yeah, I did that. Yeah.
And then I like the part where Shawn's talking about how, like, Vince is like, don't worry, I'll take all the blame. You know, it's all on me. And Shawn's like, yeah, you can say it, but, I mean, like, you know, who's it really on? You know?
Yeah, it's going to be 10 times as worse on Shawn, because he's in that dressing room. I mean, as many people in that company would say something bad about Vince, you know, for doing that, they're still going to be working for him, and, you know, they're not going to say anything about it, but it'll reflect more negatively on Shawn in the end, because he was the one doing it.
Especially just because at that time, too, you know, they were already hated. I mean, business had dropped when Shawn, you know, became champion the first time. That was part of a greater thing that was going on with WWF at the time, too. But, you know, with the politics and everything else, I mean, what did they think? I mean, that was one of the amazing parts of Beyond the Mat, that you know, it was just like the finger was getting wagged in Hunter's face by Brett's wife, and it wasn't that somebody was just punching him in the face. I mean, my God, I mean, the Undertaker could have done it. He could have killed both of them if he had wanted to, because it was just, I mean, it was also a culmination of a terrible thing. So, yeah, I mean, he deserved the comeuppance that he was going to get, even if Vince took all the blame, which, you know, he kind of initially did by the screwed breath thing and all that stuff. But, you know, he's walking around, you know, mocking him the next day. You know, Brett was right. Brett was contractually right. He was business ethically right. Was he morally right? That's the wrestling gray area. You know, basically, for the most part, he is. He had the contractual, all of those things, well, everything that went into it beforehand, and with WWF and the contract and all that stuff leading up to it. But is Canada your home territory? Yeah, I guess it is. And frankly, I thought WWF should have taken another option by having him lose to a Ken Shamrock, a Jarrett, or something, you know, anybody anywhere else, because I thought then you would have been able to have free reign to not put Brett on and to mock him afterwards, even though it still would have been a breach of contract. I would have done it a different way, but you know what? Goddamn, Brett, you couldn't lay down for Michaels. I mean, he doesn't, you know, he's going to mock you afterwards anyway. I don't think it really would have been that big of a deal. It would not have killed him. It's just, I think that was also the culmination of Brett taking himself a little bit too seriously. But with all of that said, you know, hey, he had the right to refuse. He refused, and they broke, you know, they broke their word. But with that said, again, it is wrestling. It's not like it had not happened before.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, obviously, Brett would have dropped the belt back in the States. So that's not even in dispute. But at the same time, I think Brett really did believe his own press clippings at that point that he was the greatest in Canada, whatever, the best there ever was. I think there's a lot of ego involved. But let me, just hypothetically, what do you think would have happened that night and long-term had Earl Hebner chickened out and not made that call and ran out of the building, or if Sean would have tipped Brett off and done things differently? How do you think that would have changed the wrestling business, and even that night and long-term?
Bret Hart would be – well, it, to me it's this. If Earl chickens out, then everything – basically, no matter what result had happened, Brett would end up shooting on Sean. Because if Earl chickened out, then Sean would go, what the fuck is going on here? And Brett would know something's up. It would have happened. You know, something would have happened. And again, I think they would have rang the bell no matter what. But if Brett would have been able to sink his hooks into Sean and the shock didn't set in, and he was able to either, if the match went on or even afterwards, after he rang the bell, if he wasn't sitting there looking and just decided to kill Sean, you got to look at it as WCW. If they weren't complete idiots, they could have just had him walk right in. They still probably would have messed him up, but I think it would have really, really killed Shawn Michaels, and we would have gotten Steve Austin a lot quicker. We wouldn't have had a WrestleMania 15 pass the torch sort of moment thing from New Generation to, you know, the Attitude Era sort of thing. I think it just would have, it really would have caused chaos for a little bit. And I think you may have seen Ken Shamrock, guys like that, because if he got choked out, beat up, that sort of thing, and then that guy's going over to WCW, you better do something. And they already had Don Fry at that time under contract and all that stuff. I think you may have seen more, not Brawl for It All type stuff, but more of that type of stuff instead of the Attitude stuff maybe that you got on top. I think it would have been, we got to save face, we got to get our tough guy back. You know, Vince likes that shit anyway. So I think you'd have to get that back. Sorry, a lot of words to say that. Sorry about that.
You could tell, you could see at the end of the Montreal match when Sean had the sharpshooter on and then let it go, you know, Brett's kind of holding on to his leg as he's out of it, and Sean's trying to, you know, he's trying to get out of there. Brett's still holding on to his ankle. And, you know, they kind of said, don't let him get in your position where he can hold on to you or get on top of you or something like that. So you could see that he was holding on to Sean's leg, but he was wondering what the hell was going on. And Vince would, that would have happened anyway. The bell would have rang because Vince and all those guys were down at the ring. So Earl Hebner, it really would have made no difference, I don't think.
Yeah, because he didn't even have a structure to thank him before he was calling for the bell. He just barely had turned over. I mean, they were going to do it they would have done something eventually. I mean, and even if Virgil would have chickened out, it would have just been a slower switch from, it would have just took them a little longer to overtake WCW, because WCW would have fucked up anyway. And they wouldn't have, I don't think that the WWE their business would have been strong, but it would not have been as strong as it got. It would have been maybe, you know, 2/3 of that, if that. They still would have been big, but it wouldn't, Stone Cold wouldn't have gotten over, because that led to, you know, Stone Cold and Vince is what led to the turnaround, basically, in the war. And I think, you know, slowly they would have overcame them, but it's just, it would have totally changed the business. I mean, the business blew up because of how the virus series went down.
Yeah, that was like the birth of the Mr. McMahon character, if you think about it.
Why do you think McMahon really made that call? I mean, what do you think the real reason was? He was just fed up with Brett? Do you think that was, I mean,
was
when you really
Vince
come down to the brass tacks, why did McMahon make that call?
I think Vince is just stubborn and doesn't like being told what to do, and Brett not wanting to do it just kind of, you know, made him want to do it more, you know, in a way. You know, he's a powerful man who likes to get his way. It's evident as how, you know, everything changes on Raw by the second. You know, so he just, as soon as Brett was defiant, there was no way he was going to defy Mr. McMahon.
Also,
and
think about
Vince is a hell of a gambler. Vince has always been a hell of a gambler. I mean, he talked his father in the Ali Inoki thing, WrestleMania, things he did with the Civic Center at the time when he owned that. He will roll the dice and make a ballsy move, and it was something that somebody had brought up, Moolah and Richter, and it was one of those things where it was like, if this works, good. I stuck it to a contract. I stuck it to a lawyer and an agent and a guy who's leaving anyway, and everything worked out for him, even getting punched in the face. Even that worked out. Everything worked out for the best, and it was just, I didn't like being told what to do. Fuck you. You know, he was at a weak moment because DX had a lot of power in his ear, and he, not a weak moment, but was able to be talked into things and had this idea, or was able to make this idea fly. So I just think it was a big gamble that ended up paying off for him, because he didn't like being backed into a corner, and it was like, hey, sink or swim. And the thing is, it would have hurt Michael's legacy. It would have hurt business for a while, but the reason they blew up was because all of that dumb shit underneath. Think about Wally Yamaguchi and Choppy Choppy, his PP with Val Venus. If that was happening on Raw now, what people's reaction would be? I don't think they'd think it would be too funny. Things were just going right at a good time for them as far as being able to have something that everyone, no matter where you were, could latch onto, and just wrestling on the rise anyway.
Yeah, well, if you also think about it, Vince, in doing that, not only did, you know, just you know, get the guy to do the job on pay-per-view or anything like that. I mean, he's getting, you know, they're still getting beat pretty good by WCW at the time. He's got to be thinking back in his head, you know, do this. You know, we're going to get a lot of notoriety for doing this. And, you know, that's what they were all about back then. So.
Think so?
Yeah. I mean, I could very well see him thinking that.
I don't know about that, because he knew that was going to ruin that show, basically, if you want to come right down to it. I mean, he knew that ahead
of time. Yeah, and also, I don't think he was, like, too... I don't think he was dumb enough to think that, well, nobody's going to know about this, or, you know, nobody's going to think anything was going on. I mean, of course, people are going to be interested in the story, and they're going to maybe tune into WWF and see what, you know, what the hell's going on. I could easily see him thinking that in the back of his head.
Or buying the interpreter to see what's going on.
Well, you know how second nature it is for, like, you know, like, you're amazed that things happen with guys, you know, Bernard Hopkins, or not Bernard, I mean, when times are good, but how, like, the old pros seem to catch a break, you know, they hit a shot or something like that. In a way, it's almost like, and again, WWF was not at that bad of a time. He was at one of his, even though things weren't going great, he was at a pretty good creative, you know, grind of really, because he was in competition where, sometimes you just, it's a subtle thing, maybe it's karma or a little fairy somewhere, but, you know, it worked. You know, maybe he didn't think it was going to happen, or it had the intention on it, you know, blowing up business the way that it did, but, you know, somehow it just karmatically, it's what he had always done, and it kind of put him in a position, the Brett screwed Bet interview afterwards and all that sort of stuff. I mean, I think he knew it was going to have some effect. I think he knew what was going to happen. He just didn't know it was going to be that big. And it was just right place, right time, and just made the right gamble.
And McMahon talking about, like, the time-honored traditions of the business after that, that was just amazing. I mean, he was just out there saying, this stuff is fake, and this is what people do on the way out. Just stuff he said. Well, let me ask you this. Like, these are a lot of hypothetical stuff, but if it would have been 10 years or even especially 20 years earlier, back in the territory days, this would have happened. Do you guys think Bret Hart would have been blackballed from wrestling?
No. Because the reason is he would have never had the chance. He would have never had the chance to have that in a contract or a word from a promoter that was the case. It never would have happened. Then he didn't drop the belt going out of territory. Lots of guys didn't do that. So unless it wasn't, if it was the Cotton Bowl, the Superdome, the WrestleMania,
he beat up the promoter and destroyed equipment, spit in the guy's eye, everything else. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, shit. But, I mean, guys have threatened, I mean, promoters have been threatened by wrestlers and got into it, wrestlers, you know, lots of time. I mean,
Brody made a career of it, basically.
Yeah, but and here's the thing. Let's just look at it this way. Obviously, you know, if you take it back into a different era, say Bret's beef is Vince owed him money, then wasn't going to pay him the money and said he could lose it to a guy he wanted to and is not letting him do it. So that's why Bret's pissed. Vince is looking at it that Bret's not going to drop the belt even though it's my belt, my territory. So everything's kind of like even right there. So, you know, Bret goes and punches him. You know, okay, if I'm another promoter, you know, one, the wrestlers aren't going to give a shit. 95% of them are going to go, good, I'd like to kick the shit out of, you know, Nick Goulas for ripping me off or something like that. So they'll all have a story for that for the most part. If you're another promoter, there's no honor among thieves unless they really hate somebody. It was, you know, the guys don't work opposite territories, you know, against each other, but they do, and they did. And it's just, so I don't think even back then, even if he knocked out Vince, again, if Vince would have gave him a good payoff and then the last thing he did was punch him in the face for no reason, I could understand that. But I don't think it really would have affected anything in the long run.
And especially Bret, because Bret had his own territory, basically. You know, I mean, he would have had his own territory in those back then and stuff.
Well, Bret could have went back home, but I'll give you an example, Mike, and we're going way, way back in history, but you know, Frankie Kane knocking out Roy Shriver in San Francisco basically, you know, ruined his career.
Sure, Mephisto? Yeah, and I mean, but he still did work, too. And there were other things I thought with it. It wasn't just that he hit Shire. I think there was some other stuff more to that, too.
But, I mean, just the fact that he knocked out a promoter, you know, cost him work in other places. You know, this guy, we can't bring this guy in because he's, you know, he's
sure. It's like the talent double standard, though, is always going to be out there because, again, it comes because, like, Bret's good and could draw you money. Now, back in that day, obviously, let's just say he was on top then because, you know, he wouldn't have been. But let's say he was one of those top guys. I mean, who would be a good example of this? If Stan Hansen knocked out a promoter, you know, he makes a lot of money for you. You know, another promoter's going to take him. If Bobby Fulton punched out a promoter, but that's the double standard, though. I think it would be more that than anything else, because look how bad Bruiser Brody would fuck over people, or how bad Austin Idol would fuck over people. Yet, you know, somebody was still right there to give him money again.
And, oh, by the way, I'm halfway through Stan Hansen's book, and it's great. I highly recommend it. And one more hypothetical real quick. I'm just having fun talking to you guys. Do you think Shawn Michaels would have been successful had he ever gone to WCW?
No.
Really? Why not?
I do not with who they had on top at the time and people who were running things, I do not think he would have been successful.
I think, he wouldn't have been as successful in the long run because he wouldn't have been able to have a legacy where he could have came back like he did, which really sealed the deal. These last couple times he's been back and how he grew as a performer and all that sort of stuff. I mean, WCW was so bad and Shawn Michaels' habits were so bad, he could have died there. And that's awful to say, but it's legit he could have died there, so we wouldn't be talking about him anyway. And realistically, he was the right guy for WWF at that time, and there's just no way with too many people in WCW, there's just no way. He could have been a champion. He'd still be great. He wouldn't have been the same.
He would have been, another Flying Brian or Tom Zink.
When Brett went to WCW and they just misused him, they would have done the same thing with Shawn Michaels, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think so, because I think Shawn Michaels would have fallen in with Hall and Nash and that clique, and somehow I think that would have been enough politically to protect him enough to I don't know if he would have been the biggest thing there, but I think he would have done much better than Bret Hart did in WCW. I'll put it that way.
Well, because Shawn, you know, on top of that, I couldn't imagine who he would work with, because, you know, Shawn's always about working with them, you know, with some of the really great guys. I mean, he could work with, like, Benoit or somebody like that, but on top, like working with the Hogans and the Savages, I don't know.
Yeah, but I don't think we never would have gotten to that stage of working with, Benoit, I wouldn't think.
He would have lost his smile before he could have had a chance to get over.
He would have been a champion. He would have been at the top of his game and all that sort of stuff. But with how everything turned out with WCW, there were just too many guys there and too much other stuff going on where there's no way, legacy-wise, he could have been as successful and would have been able to continue on in the way that he did and the way he's looked at and the way that he did. It's impossible to believe that could happen with everybody else who went down there and got completely lost in the mix. Yeah, he still would have been great, but shit, he just would have been another great guy that was in WCW at that time.
Yeah. Did you think in his heart of hearts, deep in his heart of hearts, that Brett knew that something was up that night in Montreal? Or do you think he was completely blindsided, as he's always maintained?
Well, I think it shows that he knew when he asked Earl, you know, the night before if something was up. I'm sure he basically says he knew something was up until Earl told him he would never, like, do that. And he said Earl was his, like, you know, his, like, killing grace or whatever. But, yeah, I'm sure he thought, you know, I'm sure he was very paranoid about that the whole time leading up to that match.
Yeah, I think he did know something was up, but then, like most people, just couldn't effing believe that it could actually happen in 1997 on national TV in Canada, and it was just like, and it was all over his face at the end of the match where it was like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. I know he was like, you screwed me, goddammit, you screwed me. That's not what he was saying. He was saying, holy fuck, you kidding me? Really? Really? And that's what it was. I mean, he knew something was up, but just could not believe that they would have the audacity to do it. Because, again, he could have killed everyone in that ring very quickly in short order, choked out Shawn Michaels, punched Sergeant Slaughter in the face, whoever they would have brought in there, he would have been raging, and then would have come, you know, Davey Boy, Owen Hart, and then possibly, because you never know what could have happened, Foley, Undertaker, some of the other guys who were pro-union, pro-wrestler type of guys who were seeing this breakout and go, fuck this shit, we're going to defend our boy.
Dude, Gerald Briscoe would have took care of all of them, dude.
Hey, guys.
I'm sorry.
Indulge me. This has been a lot of fun asking these questions. Appreciate you taking the time. Can I just ask one more off-topic question real quick and get off the phone, Ed?
Sure.
This is for Semper Vivi, but anybody can answer this as one. Mike, everybody, is like, does this Nick Diaz GSP stuff just prove the whole world is stupid? I mean, Nick Diaz goes in the ring and says, I think George was faking all along. Who cares? This is third-grade bullshit. Why would anybody even fall for this? All they had to do is blow his comment off, and it wouldn't have even meant nothing. I can't believe that small comment has made this money fight, knock other people out of fights. I mean, the whole thing just seems so weak and dumb to me. I mean, I'm missing something here, Mike?
Well, no, when Brian...
Does this speak to the whole human condition as a whole somehow, or what's going on, Mike?
No, it's really more that we like to be fired up for a fight. It's the promotion 101. We like this sort of stuff as fans, and that's why that's why it happened. But Brian and I, we were talking about Observer Live. We had talked about it. It's like, you know, I find it very convenient that the GSP report came out right afterwards. An unflappable man like that, who is very aware of Nick Diaz, that all of a sudden you have defended, you know, you defaced my honor and defaced Quebec, and I'm going to lay the worst beating on this man. You know, and Condit, we've called Condit's people, and thanks for stepping aside. And I kind of pointed out that that was kind of coming too convenient. And it's amazing that they had time to call Condit. Then later on that day, you know, Condit's camp comes flat out and says, well, no, we didn't step aside. We're happy for them that they got the fight they wanted, but we didn't step aside for anything. It's just, I'm not saying they set it up right off the bat, but Dana quickly took advantage of an opportunity. We just want to be sold on the fight that we, you know, for the fight fans, they want to see that fight anyway. That was the one they wanted to see. They want to see Condit fight the winner or fight GSP. They do. But this was the one they really wanted to see. We wanted to be told it was going to happen. And Nick Diaz doing this and saying what he said, but just being Nick Diaz, it was they struck while the iron was hot. And I think we just want to be told that we want to see this fight. It's like watching Roger Mayweather. You don't want to watch Roger Mayweather at your house, but on 24/7, you get a big kick out of watching Roger Mayweather. And I just think it's that sort of mentality about it. Now, I think where people are getting too overly, you know, the people are stupid, it's the ones that are trying to, like, blow holes in this or not like Nick Diaz or come up with all these reasons why it was bullshit. The only person I feel bad for is Carlos Condit, but you know what? They're going to take care of Condit no matter what. When shit like this happens, I guarantee you that Carlos Condit financially and, you know, professionally, but especially financially, is going to be taken care of with this.
I don't know what two guys are y'all talking about.
Anyway, go back. It's all a work. It's all a work. TSP didn't give a rat's ass about what Nick Diaz says. but look at how he was just laughing it off at, when it was happening. He just knows that it's going to go to the fight. But anyway, let's go ahead and we'll get off of this. You can talk about
real
this.
Real quick, I wanted to ask an MMA question real quick to both of you guys. Y'all both are obviously big fans. Is it like, I just follow it from, you know, reading and hearing what Dave and Brian say about MMA and stuff like that. But it seems like there's always an awful lot of, like, injuries and canceling fights. And I wonder how much that bothers you guys. I mean, it bothers me
a lot because it fucking cost me from watching Brock Lesnar in fucking Vegas in May one time. It fucking cost me from fucking watching. It cost me to watch fucking Rampage against Matt Hamill this past year. It pisses me off.
Yeah, I was just asking, you know, because, I mean, being real is kind of, you know, people are going to get injured whether you're training or doing something like that. It's not like wrestling.
And now that they have full insurance,
you
know, a lot of these younger, you know, the lower card guys would go ahead and fight hurt just so they could say they got fight hurt in the fight. But now they got this insurance where, you know, they don't have to do that shit no more. And it's just going to keep happening. I mean, look, this past year has been a disaster as far as injuries. I mean, look at how many things have changed. I mean,
think it's a disaster. I know it's shitty, and I know it fucks up when you're trying to extract $60 out of people every month, and I understand.
You
want to
watch Rampage against
that.
Matt Hamill, you feel the exact same way I do.
Yeah, but you know what? Oh, believe me, I got ripped off. I got ripped off a couple times on the shows, but, you know, I'm going with a press pass, so what the hell, I'm not paying for it. So, but in any event, I think it's just, being a big sports fan and growing up boxing, it's, I don't mind it because, you know what, UFC, MMA in general, will at least give you 10 fights on a card, and they give you a reason to care, and there's action throughout them all where it sucks, it blows business-wise. But, you know, I understand as a fan, if this happens too much, then yes, it's going to end up hurting everyone, but, you know, it's not like boxing where at the last second a guy doesn't make weight or something happens and they don't have the show. You're still going to have the show with a certain, you know, not the best replacement in all cases, but they try their best. And they always try to make up for it later on, too. I mean, the UFC has always been good with that as far as being under Zuffa, as far as, you know, like the Shamrock Keto or Couture and Belfort. They've always tried to make up for it after the fact. And I think, I don't know. I just think that it's one of those things that happens in sports. I'm used to it happening. It's shitty that it happens, but, you know, it could be worse. Now, if it wiped out every single title fight this year or something like that, then, yeah, you'd have to really question what the hell is going on with training and lots of other things. But yeah, to me, it's just one of those things where it's like shit happens, and man, sorry for you business-wise.
What do you guys think about just doing, like, that one fight on the first spot special?
I can't wait to rip Brian to shreds for this, but Ed, you go ahead first.
Well, I think they could easily do an hour, even if it only goes a couple minutes. But, I mean, I'm just disappointed because I kind of would have liked to have seen Ben Henderson and Quake Lita. I mean, I'm disappointed about not seeing that, but I think it'll be fine. I mean, Fox knows what the fuck they're doing as far as production and all that, and unless it's just a boring ass fight, which I don't see happening, it's going to be an okay show.
I would at least go with two fights just because, you know, if it's your debut, I think you just want to give the audience what they're tuning in to see a little bit more, you know. And I think it's kind of a gamble to take.
I think it'll be okay because they might not show another fight, but that doesn't mean they're not going to show every single best highlight of every fight, second of every fight as a video package, you know. So, I mean, that's why I don't think it's such a big a deal. Brian's just being a little bitch like he was being a little bitch about the muck sucking.
Well, yeah, and all of us watch real sports. You know, there's a lot of concerns for the UFC as far as the Fox deal, and when you look at it from a sporting business point of view, where you want to do what the NFL did, you want to do what, you know, certain sports have done. You don't want to do what NASCAR did, hurt your base for lots of different reasons, and problems that hockey got into. You know, there's going to be things that Brian's not going to like, and that a lot of people who have been following pure MMA for a long time are not going to like about getting UFC into the pantheon of, again, having, you know, truck sponsorships and having the big beer sponsorships and having these. There are things you have to do, and there's going to be things that people don't like. Tough shit. As long as the basic tenets of what they're doing remain true and they still remember their base, you know, they're continuing to make the right path. I mean, there's just going to be shit that happens when you join up corporately and you have sponsors like, you know, in networks like Fox. You just have to do certain things. As far as the hour goes, I'm fine with the one fight because they never said they were not going to air highlights. And you got to look at it from when you have an hour. I mean, we've all seen boxing.
I know, that's the thing. Brian thinks that since they're not going to have any other fights, that it's like the other fights don't exist. And it's all going to be 1 hour of Cain and Dos Santos. Well, no,
yeah.
Because they're going to show the highlights. They're going to make it look as exciting as possible.
Yes, yes. And for everybody who's been to a UFC show, the Teenage Wasteland thing, Nathan and I were talking about in Philadelphia when I saw him.
Yeah,
we were both big.
Do you think they're actually going to play it? Because wouldn't they have to pay like a shitload of money, and that's what the problem's been and why they haven't shown it so far? I agree. I hope that's the most awesome thing I've ever seen.
Oh, that it's so great, and there's ways to tweak it where it works every time. I honestly think they do because it's just, you know, it's too easy to pay for the rights that one time. It's not like this show's going to be sold on DVD or anything, and if it is, it would be in a different form than some of the stuff that they would do, so I don't think it's a concern that way. I think either that's going to be the regular theme, which I'd be fine with, too, for UFC shows if they decide to mix it up, or they're going to show that. And the thing is, you begin a show, how many commercial breaks are you going to have before the fight comes on? You need a half hour blocked out for the fight no matter what. No matter what, you need that blocked out. So you got a half hour. The first half hour is leading it into people that you have to assume have never seen your fucking show. So you need to have Kurt Menefee there. He's a face that does boxing lead-ins, okay? He knows how to do this job as far as throwing it to guys. You need to introduce the market. This is Dana White. This is this person. Hey, we got a pay-per-view coming up with this big motherfucker. You know him. He's Brock Lesnar. He's going to fight this other big motherfucker. You need to get this across, and you got to go to commercial break, and you got to have some sponsorship things like, you know, GMC Truck presents, you know, Rules of the Cage, and all that sort of stuff. You have got to assume this first time you're building up to one thing, a heavyweight title fight. The reason they did that is because it's something that everyone knows. That same night, Pacquiao is going to face Marquez. This night is going to be, to me, the symbolic end of boxing in North America as the number one combat sport. We used to watch title fights on ABC years ago. Now you're going to get a heavyweight one in the new martial arts, the new combat sport.
you know, for the future in the UFC while you have Pacquiao in a fight that nobody gives a shit about against Marquez for the third time. This is a big deal, and you have to assume everyone watching doesn't know what they're going to watch, so you hit them with all that shit, and then after that, you got so many highlights you could wrap up that you could put at the end of that thing if it only lasts a minute. So I'm going to rip Brian to fucking shreds the next time I get to him, although I can't curse, which really bothers me about being on the byline. I don't know how I got the show where I can't curse. Todd's the smart one and everything. He should have the show where he can't curse.
It's taped. Can't they go back and bleep it out?
No, well, and believe me, we've slipped in recording the thing, you know, and actually Brian has been the one to really do it, where, yes, it does happen, but it makes it very, very time-consuming.
Yeah, well, going back to that, I don't know how you got that damn job anyway, but feel free to tell him that even I knew that he's a dumbass for what he was thinking about. But let's go ahead and get back to the DVD here. So we talked about, like, when they were the tag teams, and we talked a little bit about when they started to get success as singles. And the middle part of the DVD probably focuses on what led to the eventual hatred between the two. And it's two different things. It's for Brett, he starts getting a little pissed off when Sean's telling him, oh, yeah, I'm going to work with Scott, and I'm going to work with Nash, and I'm going to work with maybe even the kid. And he's getting pissed off that Sean just wants to work with his friends, whereas Sean's getting pissed off because he feels that Brett doesn't respect him and hasn't given him that pat on the back, whereas on the DVD, Brett's like, well, it was coming, it was coming.
I think it's just, it was, you know, it was a interesting professional clash of egos in a way, kind of a reminder of how, in a way, high schoolish, you know, the whole thing is of like, you know, I wanted my shot, and you should have, you know, bumped me up, and, you know, should have given me that pat on the back. Well, it was coming, and there's the whole thing with the spots and everything else. I mean, it's kind of just good. I guess good old wrestling 101 as far as, like, professional competition goes. Just in the vitriol, though, with the families and all that stuff, when that started to get so increased and so hot and so heavy, it was amazing.
And also, I think Brett knew, like he got the title back in November of 95 from Diesel, and he knew he was a transitional champion, so I think that's kind of where his attitude came from as well.
Yeah.
You know, he's just there to drop the belt to Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, who's a guy who professionally he doesn't like, personally he doesn't really, not that he didn't hate him, but obviously they didn't get along, and even though they didn't hate each other, they obviously were like oil and water anyway as far as lifestyles go, so you know that it didn't have to make him happy. Plus, again, Brett was in that camp, it's like, Shawn Michaels isn't going to draw any money. Is he really going to, you know, what's his proof? What's his credentials? And I'm sure all that's really floating around the back of his mind, too, when he's been pushed down so many times. He had Hogan. Well, they pushed him down for Hogan after Yokozuna. They pushed him down for Diesel. They pushed him down for Sid and bigger guys and Vader and all this stuff. So it's like, God, I got to lose it to Shawn Michaels, who, yeah, he's about my size. He's athletic and all that stuff, but he's not me.
And when these two guys, when they first went, like, Britt went in singles and, you know, in 1991, and then it was just like a few short months later that Shawn did when he turned heel and became a singles wrestler. You could tell, like, when they both became singles that eventually these guys were going to be, as the years went on, these two guys were the guys going to be, like, competing for the number one and number two spots in the company. I mean, I could pretty much tell that.
Yeah. See, and I didn't believe it with Shawn Michaels. I really didn't. Brett, I kind of did, even though I always thought his mouth was going to end up, like, he would never be, he'd always, like, he might get the title type of thing, but he'd always be, like, IC title level. Like, you know, before it was an insult, he'd be, like, you know, he wouldn't be the Morocco. He'd be, like, Tito or something like that, or like a Ricky Steamboat where he's really great to watch. Actually, Steamboat would be perfect. He's really great to watch, but if you wanted to knock him, it's because he couldn't do the interview. And, he was there to make other guys look a little bit better. Shawn Michaels, I just thought, was great physically and could do all of that stuff, but would be kind of what Brian Pillman was for the longest time. I just didn't think he'd be able to be that guy. You know, Kurt Hennig, yes. Bret Hart, yes. You know, some of the smaller guys like that.
but just I never thought it was going to be Shawn Michaels. I just didn't think that Heartbreak Kid thing would actually continue to fly. As I was getting older, it was just I just didn't buy it. And I'm stunned
yeah,
that
more
he,
than
I mean.
Go ahead, sir. I think more than anything is that was just his performances in the ring. I think is what opened people's eyes about him. You know, on in the future. No, because I think he's still probably the best, greatest in-ring performer in the company's history.
It's always debatable, but, you know, it's in a way, it's really kind of hard to argue that because he was great against everyone. He could talk. He could make the facial expression. And he could do it with everyone, no matter the size. I know Bret Hart could, too. But just not like Shawn Michaels, because Shawn Michaels had that little bit of he had that extra flair.
Yeah, he was. Shawn was one of those guys that he could consistently make anybody he's in the ring with look better. I mean, there's like so few guys that like here in the States that could have done that. I mean, like Flair, Shawn Michaels, and like Chris Benoit were all pretty consistent in being able to make guys look good in the ring. I thought.
Yeah, but. Going back to the DVD, like pretty much, but still at this point, you know, they're starting to get their distrust. But as far as the story they tell in the DVD is that everything's still cool. That they still have their plan and what they're doing. They know what's going on, and it didn't get till later on where when toward the end of the feud before Survivor Series, where they actually started to get like very personal with each other. And I'll play a clip from that area. Oh, shit.
You, Hitman, and I can settle this thing once and for all. None of your goons jumping in. None of your excuses that we have heard for over a year. We are going to find out once and for all if Bret the Hitman Hart can get beat like a man. Because Bret, believe me, you couldn't go 10 minutes in any situation, if you know what I mean.
Oh, boy.
And,
listen here,
even
Shawn
though,
Michaels.
Even though lately you've had some sunny days, my friend, you still can't get the job done. A Heartbreak Kid coming off a knee injury, you coming off a knee injury, they're all handcuffed. Hitman, I'm going to knock you down and drag you out.
One of the comments that Bret makes on the DVD is that they kind of, in a way, they kind of work each other into a real feud. Because they're saying, oh, yeah, go ahead, it's okay. But then either one of them would say what they have to say, and the other one would be like, you son of a bitch.
Go
ahead.
I would say that's always been the amazing part about this whole thing, because Bret's talked about it before. It was just and Shawn did too, and like the RF shoots and things like that, where it was just like it's amazing they didn't even realize it. They did, but they didn't. How much they were whipping themselves into this absolute frenzy. We're gonna work the boys, and then they end up working themselves. And it's like, you know, Shawn didn't like the fact that Bret was, you know, saying stuff, you know, calling him a fag and all this other stuff that he had said about him. And you know, Shawn turning around and doing what he did there, you know, with the sunny days comment and stuff like that, where it was like, holy shit. You know, it's amazing how they worked themselves into that sort of frenzy.
It was a backstage feud that took place on TV, what came off to me, like in the end.
There's also another feud very similar to this one in a way that actually played out on TV too, but it was played out in a more professional way, like the Chris Benoit, Kevin Sullivan, Nancy, you know, woman, you know, that it was a real life thing that it was basically, it was kind of in a shoot in a way, but they were always professional with each other. I mean, everything was always agreed on, whether it was said, interviews, the matches were worked out. And you had something that was even more of a reason to really hate and do shit like that, because it was actually like a love triangle thing, but they were able to keep it professional. And then you got two guys, just because their egos got a little hurt, And, you know, they turned it into a really nasty thing that, like you said, somehow luckily got played out in front of everyone's eyes.
And it shows you how little they liked each other and how much oil and water that they were. I mean, you know, it's one thing to not like a guy professionally and stuff like that, but to get to that point, you know, it was just proof that these two are just, they're two completely different people. And, again, I don't, you know, that... You know, when all wrestlers, and I'm saying all wrestlers, you know, there's been your Rick Martels and guys like that who have stayed loyal to Tito Santana to their wives, you know, by all reports their whole life. You know, you're calling somebody else out for infidelity on the air when, you know, they have a whole family, a big family that's watching, and he's, you know, and Bret Hart, you know, and obviously it was the era and what you could say on TV and stuff like that, but getting away with doing what he did and staying on stage too long and rambling and pissing Sean off that way, which is, again, you're hurting him professionally. You're hurting his, in theory, his pocketbook and his performance, and you go and do that to him. I mean, man, the vitriol, it went way past professional hatred, obviously.
With these two guys, when they were, you know, I wasn't, like, this was in 97, and I just, like, started getting, like, into the internet, and, you know, I wasn't really an inside fan at that point, so a lot of the stuff they talked about, like, on TV sometimes would kind of go over my head. Like, the Sunny Days thing, I never realized what that was until, like, years later when I, like, read an Observer or something like that. You know, there was a lot of heat over that. You know, I just never picked up on stuff like that. It's weird.
Yeah, we were online and stuff like that, you know, a little bit, and, you know, and people would get newsletters, and, like, we'd get hear about it, like, for him, but I wasn't heavy into that. There were still a couple of random wrestling radio shows and random things like that, enough stuff online at that time. But yeah, somebody had to tell me about that one, because I didn't really draw the line. You know, I was thinking of the sex comment from, you know, earlier about not lasting 10 minutes, and the Sunny, for some reason, it just kind of went over my head until, you know, somebody said it, like, you know, a week or two later, somebody actually said what it was.
It was just like the John Laurinaitis skateboard deal, you know? I don't think many people know what the fuck they're talking about on Raw when they do that.
I mean, go to war. I was there. I was from that era. I liked Shane Douglas in UWF Mid-South when I had seen him there, and I didn't know who Johnny Ace was nor gave a shit. And it was awful. They did the whole thing with Cornette and the Midnight Express. And, I mean, I was there and remember it. And the only reason I remember it is because this has jogged my memory for it. But nobody else knows that shit. And for the most part, nobody thinks, you know, like I do about wrestling. So nobody's going to fucking remember that shit. It's a complete waste without having the sight gags and the shit like that to go with it. And as much as they love burying Shane Douglas, you know, and how little respect that they have for him, I'm surprised they have not done a burial thing that way for him. I'm also surprised they haven't bought any footage from All Japan or used Road Warrior Animal either.
You know, it's like I say, it is a waste, but I for one laughed my fucking ass off when Cena made that comment. But real quick, everyone check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at AngryMarks.com along with a lot of other shows. And we'll go ahead and keep talking about this for a little while here. Now, as far as the DVD, I really liked, you know, Sean was actually really, really good in talking about basically just, like I think Atrice said earlier, just coming clean on so many things. Like, he talked about they're having a meeting with, like, Vince, I guess, Sean and Hunter, and Sean's basically saying how he was quiet, and it was basically Hunter was the one. No, you know, you have to do this or you can't do this. And also talking about how Gerald Briscoe was asking him if he wanted to teach him some moves, and he's like, no, you know, no, I don't want it to get like that or that to happen. And you really do see a lot of regret and remorse from Sean in it. So, I mean, Sean really comes out to me as the star of the DVD just because, you know, just, I guess the position he was put in, you know, basically.
Yeah, I didn't see where they were talking about that, but, I mean, hey, again, you know, who had the most to lose in this whole thing? It was never Vince where Brett could have taken the belt, took a dump on it on the air, balled it up, threw it, you know, in a trash can, and then threw it into the river like he used to do back in the day,
it still wouldn't have hurt him as bad as if Sean would have gotten his fucking ass kicked. And if he would have been choked out and embarrassed and beaten up, I mean, and again, you consider his mental condition at that time, too, with what was going on with him, and obviously he had the drug issues and obviously the depression issues and thought issues that came from that and the place he was at in his life and being stressed and all that stuff. What would it have done to him mentally? You know, he had the most to lose going out there. I mean, Triple H may have been the most savvy one as far as setting it up and as far as, and again, he didn't have to be in it, you know? So, you know, that again, Sean had balls.
And the Triple H comment is something like, you know, Triple H said that he was the one that threw out the idea that, you know, screwed him in the ring. But it kind of sounds like it's something that, you know, you're bouncing ideas off of each other. And that just sounds like something you throw out there, expecting to say, oh, whatever, fuck that. And except they took him up on the offer, you know, talk about it a little bit more and eventually end up doing it.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise. It's amazing, too. In a way, you give it to him as far as, you know, word not getting out, keeping it tight. I mean, again, I can't imagine what Brett had to think going back there and having to look at, like, Pat Patterson and go, you Quebec motherfucker, you know, you screwed me. Did I do something to you? And just having to look at everyone and be completely paranoid, even though you knew who it was. Everyone had to be looking at themselves after that and going, who actually knew about this?
Yeah,
unless he said it, I probably wouldn't have thought Jim Cornette would have had anything to do with it. And, you know, Cornette's always been one of the more outspoken ones with, like, Brett taking himself way too seriously that way. And that, you know, I think Cornette knew, and there were a couple other people that actually knew.
Well, according to the DVD, it's basically just Vince, Sean, and Hunter, and Gerald Briscoe, and then like Earl, like I guess that afternoon or whatever. But yeah, I'm sure there might have been a few other people who might have known. But
in the end, if I was Shawn Michaels, I don't know if I could actually go out there and take part in something like that. It's too hard for me to say. Like if I'm not actually, you know, literally being asked to do it, I don't know. Not something
like what I think Brett says hurt him the most is because he says that there's no way in hell he would have done it if it would have been the other way around.
Yeah, and look at the shape the company was in at the time. It's not like Shawn Michaels was going to get fired because he didn't want to go out there and do that. You know, they needed all help they could get at that point. So,
go ahead, Sean.
I was saying, I guess you get worked into a frenzy and be told that, you know, this is your professionalism. He's trying to demean there. And, you know, I think I could figure out a way to justify it in my own head. But, again, if I had some other type of recourse, because I wouldn't want someone doing that to me professionally, I would take every option I had to have some other recourse in it. And, frankly, again, I know the satisfaction of being bred in Quebec would have been something, but I would have been completely fine also, you know, beating Jarrett for it on the house show the next night in the four-way or something like that at Foxborough or wherever it was or whatever that was, and then showing up to Raw and going, you know what, the puss, you know, ran away, got beat up in the match. You never show the footage or something like that. Now he's hightailing it down there with all the other losers. I don't know. There's ways you could have done it without doing it in the way that they did.
Yeah, you know, I don't think Sean would have done it if Hunter wouldn't have been there by his side egging him on to do it. I think he would have chickened out. I think he would have chickened out. I think Hunter was, you know, it's a big difference when you get someone backing you up.
One thing on the DVD is they never really brought up that they were worried that Brett was going to, you know, go show up on Nitro, like, with the title or something. You know, that's what they've always brought up before, but it was never brought up on this one.
That's more of Vince McMahon line. Like, had Vince had, like, time on the DVD or, like, interest in it, he would have definitely.
And bottom line is they wouldn't have been able to do that anyway because, I mean, didn't, like, it get ruled, like, in the courts or something that a championship belt is, like, a physical representative, like, of the company or something?
Yeah, that's the whole thing because it came down when Flair fronted the money and had that money to get the belt made, the big gold version of the belt when they went from the Dome Globe over, you know, he put in his, because it was still that old school, he put in that deposit for the belt that they used to do back in the day. So he had that deposit, and so he looked at it as the belt was his. But then, I mean, that may have been at least the biggest case up to that point of what intellectual property meant for professional wrestling and the symbolism that that belt, you know, gave, which, frankly, if I was a quarter, I probably wouldn't have ruled it at the time. I would have ruled more for Flair and go, well, you had all these different belts, but he kind of had set the precedent for that. Plus, you were just coming off the Hall Nash thing, too, where, to be honest, if Brett, I would have let Brett take the belt to Nitro, dump it in the trash can. Again, I know perception would be bad, but the reality is the financial straits they were in, you sue Bret Hart for breach of contract and everything else he's worth because, yeah, he had the right to refuse dropping the belt to certain people, but he did not have the right to refuse to drop the belt completely and to walk away with it. That would have been a huge lawsuit that they would have won. It would have been ended up being settled after a while. But as long as it didn't kill them financially in the courts, that would have been something that would have been huge money for them. Maybe bad perception for a short period of time, but without things turned out, it didn't matter anyway. Probably would have been a hell of a monetary windfall.
Yeah. And yet, Coach, I mentioned earlier about Bret Hart having to go like backstage and like facing everybody. I mean, how they talk, Sean talks about how Hunter was a big part of it. It just amplifies, you know, that when you watch, like, think back to Wrestling with Shadow, then you get that one scene where we brought up earlier where Brett's wife is accusing Hunter of knowing, and Hunter's just there shaking his head like, no, you know, we didn't have nothing to do about it. I mean,
it was so weird about that, too, watching all the other wrestlers around him, too, like Hawk and all those guys, and it was like, it was almost surreal.
Yeah,
that movie made me think this whole thing was a work because it was just too perfect. They got all this whole story, you know, just doing like a random documentary on Bret Hart. I mean, really, they were pretty damn lucky.
I'm sad that company went like bankrupt or like went under or whatever because apparently they have footage of Undertaker like storming the hall pissed off, and they have, you know, a lot of the other like arguments going on backstage and stuff. I mean,
oh man,
the shit that they have is just mind blowing. The stuff that they do have, but just the stuff that went on, you know, the Undertaker banging on Vince's door and everything. I mean, it's just like it has to be one of the craziest nights in the history. I mean, I've always said that that's the most important night in the history of pro wrestling because that changed everything.
They were in the dressing room when they said Vince is here in Bret Hart's dressing room, and you know, maybe Bret told him to leave. So I don't know. How do I seen that on tape?
I don't think they got that on tape though. But just seeing Vince walk out of there all fucking rubber legged and just like out of it, you know. I mean,
he looked embarrassed. Like he looked embarrassed as hell when he was just limping down the hall.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I just, you know, as you brought up, this is another good subject for you guys one day of what everyone's seminal moment they think in wrestling. Obviously, because it's hard to pick one because of the chain of events and things like that, but there's a fun show to do of, like, what would be the biggest thing? Because you know what? I think Austin would have been so strong, and I think everybody else there would have been so strong. If that never happened, I think the world would have kept spinning a little closer, but it made me think of, like, Piper Hogan at the Garden, where they did, you know, the brawl to settle it all and what that did. It is kind of interesting when you look at these big seminal moments and what if they would have never happened or what if something would have changed.
Well, also, I look at it as, you know, like, what if Bret had never left the WWF? You know, I think maybe Owen Hart would probably still be alive if he had never left.
I think so, because he would have never had a chance to fall in that malaise feud, and he probably, you know, the programming with the Godfather and the IC, I mean, a lot of that stemmed from, he was a Nugget, he was this, he was part of the Nation, and he would have never had any of that. Like the Hart Foundation would have, look, think of Davey Boy, as sad as this is, he goes and it hurts his knee, throwing Shane, you know, off of Brett's back when Shane jumped on him in the locker room, hurts himself. You know, and again, not saying he didn't have issues before that, you know, but then he goes to WCW, is wasted completely, you know, awful, hurts his back on the trapdoor for the Warriors one appearance, hurts that, he's out. Then he comes back to WWE, remember that whole thing with the dog food thing, it was Hardcore Holly he beat up and got the IC title. It just, and then, you know, and that was awful and led to a lot of family issues between him and Brett and stress and all of these other things. That chain of events, if that didn't happen, affects a lot of lives.
Yeah, and just, and also just look at it from the aspect of, you know, Brett never would have went to WCW. He might have never had a choice. Most likely, you know? Like, at least have been wrestling up until, like maybe this year or something. I think he would have come back to WWF a long time ago if he could still work.
Yeah, I tell you what, we would have never had, though, we would have never had the Goldberg Bret Hart in Toronto iron plate situation, which I will say this, and I don't know, you know, they probably would have screwed this up too, but when Bret Hart was speared by Goldberg and then, you know, came up to reveal the metal breastplate, that was awesome.
When they were putting the thing together in the back, you know, Bischoff and Bret were talking about it, and what Bischoff wanted was for Goldberg to hit the spear and, you know, he get knocked out from the chest plate and Bret down, and then Bischoff's idea was for Hulk Hogan to come back in and lay both guys out. And Bret said, well, is Hogan working with me or Goldberg? And he says, no. He said, well, why the fuck would we do that? So.
Well, they shit the bed with that, with Bischoff running out going, what are you doing? Yeah, it was just like, you know what, even though, you know, there was supposed to be this, you know, era of yes, he was the executive producer and really ran the company and all that stuff, it wasn't believable, and it actually just kind of took away from it. And then, you know, the saddest part is that whole thing went away because obviously Owen had passed.
Yeah. I mean, another thing you look at, you know, like, and like with other people, look at, you know, what would have happened if Chris Benoit and Nancy Sullivan would have never got together, you know?
Imagine if Brett stays there, Owen stays there, things are rocking. Say Sean is out of the equation because he falls off, but they're still off and all that. And Benoit comes in because he's got the word of Bret Hart. And, you know, yeah, he can't talk, but put him with us. He's going to be a killer. Team him up with Brian Pillman. What a combination that would have goddamn been. And, again, you just – it's amazing the effect, but you just never know.
And, of course, you got the old classic one, you know, what if David Von Erich hadn't died?
Would have been an NWA champion. You know,
what a Magnum TA wouldn't have had his wreck.
And you know what? And this is going to sound kind of weird, but, I mean, y'all remember this, you know, and some people listen will remember. That chain of effect, he was going to face Jimmy Garvin. Well, you know, not long after that, I mean, Jimmy Garvin, they burned Ronnie Garvin. I think it was, that was 80, I think it was the same year. I think, was it going into Star? Was that Starcade 86 or 87?
87, when, was that the dream date or something like that?
Well, it was just that, like, you know, they burn Garvin, they break up the team with Garvin and Windham, and they turn Jimmy Garvin, you know, face, you know, Jimmy Garvin and Magnum TA, you know, he was going to beat Magnum for the belt. I think that's how that was going to work, be the U.S. champion, because he was always great in that, like, America's champion role, that secondary champion role he was great in, I thought. And, you know, and then he had Magnum that was going to go on and win the world title, you know, because he had dropped that. And it's just, you know, again, another weird, wacky chain of effects where, you know, Ronnie Garvin ends up world champion. And it's just, again, a lot of wackiness.
Now, I got a question real quick about, because, you know, there's always a lot of talk back and forth of this particular match. And a lot of people don't like it. And what were your impressions of their Iron Man match? Because I know it's kind of like a controversial subject at times.
I like the match, but I don't think it was the best match I ever seen. I mean, I think Sean and Bret overhype it as being this, like, super great, super classic. I mean, it was good, but I've seen, I grew up watching Ric Flair wrestle 60-minute matches live in front of me with David and Kerry Von Erich. I mean, it was good, but it's not. It doesn't deserve the legendary status that it gets or that the two in the company try to portray it as.
No, absolutely not. I agree with that, too. I mean, just because it was long. And, again, it was a great match. I don't want to take anything away from it, but it's just, like, off the top of my head in that same time span, you know, Michaels Foley and Brett Owen. And there were just, again, there were a bunch of others I liked more. I thought the finish of it was kind of wonky. The way that they did it, it was just like, you know, I'm fine with this being a sports fan in a way of the overtime thing, but I think it was just, it was a great match in kind of a wrong era, in front of the wrong crowd, at the wrong time for the company. I mean, again, great match, obviously didn't hurt the company or anything like that, but I just,
it had something about it didn't feel right. They had too much downtime because of the, you know, they have to pace themselves. You know, there was a lot of wrestlers throughout the whole match. You know what I mean? It wasn't as exciting as, you know, like you say, the Brett Owen or the Shawn and like Razor Ramon match. You know, it was great, but there was a lot of stuff that was just so because they had, like I say, to pace themselves.
Watching Flair, too. I mean, you know watching Flair. If Flair steamboat for an hour, compared to that, shit. No.
And also, you're not getting the payoff to, like, an Iron Man match when you do no falls. It's kind of like, well, why even bother doing one? I mean, one of the hooks of an Iron Man match, you know, you can have multiple falls, and then whoever has the most at the end wins, and you don't do any. I mean, that's just, I don't know. It feels like a bait and switch. I didn't get the match that you said I was going to get. Really, all I got was like a one-hour match with no falls until like the sudden death or something like that.
Sure, that's what I was thinking about too when it was happening. It was like I just thought about Texas Deathmatch. Can you imagine a Texas Deathmatch? I don't know why I remember thinking that, but it was just like it was. If the whole thing was how many falls you got, and then you get up again, you drag your ass back up again. It was just like. I don't know. It was. I guess I was too smart too, so I couldn't be completely engulfed into the thing where it was just like you knew it was going to go for an hour, and it was. And again, and not that they weren't awesome, but it just that's not the spirit of an Iron Man match. That's not what I was used to. I didn't think at the end of it that my mind was changed from it. It was like okay, but it's just again 25. No, I did take that back. About a half hour into it, it was just like. Yeah, that this is probably the way this is going to go, and it happened that way.
I mean, perfect scenario would be for these two guys in the main event of WrestleMania, put them out there, and, you know, if you want to do a long match, let them go 40, 45 minutes or something like that, you know? Don't tell me it's going to go an hour, because, like, I don't care if Iron Man matches in the first place, just because they tell you how long it's going to be, and, I mean, not that none of them are good, because there have been plenty of, like, classic ones, but I just prefer, you know, just go to a 60-minute draw or something like that with me not knowing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because you know you're going to watch 60 minutes, so there's not that excitement that it could end at any time.
Yes. And because you know in an Iron Man match, because it's never happened and it wouldn't work unless it's done in a preliminary way to build up a feud later, you know it's not going to be by the time that hour ends, somebody wins 7-1. You know it's going to be what it's going to be where somebody rallies at the end, you know, at worst or something like that. I mean, it just doesn't happen that way. And again, when it got started getting so late, again, maybe I'd watched too much wrestling, but it was just like, this is where they're going with this. And then you think about, those great matches like Flair Windham, and it's just like that last half hour wasn't good enough, and now we've got to watch another half that's just like, I don't know. Again, I don't mean to downplay the match, but just didn't work for me at that time.
Well, what would work better is if it's, you know, okay, they went basically to a 0-0 draw and then had the overtime. Even if they would have gone to a 3-3 tie to overtime, would have been better because you would have had the excitement of the, you know, the six pins. You know, that just that fact that there was no pins in the 60 minutes just took a lot of excitement out of the match. I mean, it just them adding different. Two, making it tie, 1-1, 2-2, 3-3, would have made such a big difference.
I mean, I would have just gone with like 1-1, each guy getting a fall over the other one, because with these two guys, it's, I mean, about each one of them like pinning the other guy within an hour like once, because, you know, these are guys that work long matches anyway, so it's a little bit more realistic that you only beat them like once in like the hour or something like that. So, and plus you have the other guy, whoever loses, they said, well, I beat him in like one of those falls, so they could kind of have a little out that way too. To come back
it's
for
true.
A rematch.
Yeah. But I guess we can slowly start to wrap it up. Shipp, is there anything regarding the Sean and Brett that you want to bring up before we start to wrap up?
Wait, is it relates to what?
Is there anything like left that you want to just bring up about Sean and Brett that you want to bring up before we start to wrap up the show?
No, yeah, I have to finish watching the rest of it. I don't know if there's been, I'm not sure about the extras or anything on it yet, but no, it's nice that both these guys are at a point in their lives, at a point in their careers with everything that's happened health-wise and all of this stuff that they are letting them, they've done a top quality DVD that's low on the bullshit, high on the history, the mentioning of guys, how they got to that point. It's how you do a DVD, and again, talking about the old stuff and how it led in, and the old stuff as far as the tag teams and their relationship and all that sort of stuff. Again, they did a good job, and this is what they should be doing at all times, whether somebody agrees with them or not, because it makes for better video and it makes people want to watch it more.
Yeah, when I got to the end of it, and it may sound corny and a little bit cheesy, but, I think it's, even after these guys hated each other for years, I think it's pretty awesome that they've now become friends again. I mean, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think, after Brett had a stroke, Sean's had bad issues, he's got a screwed up eye, both their bodies are broken, and all of that vitriol and all of that stuff, it's like, you know what, two dudes grew up, after being young and having problems and being in a business that's not grown up, they grew up and they came to, however you feel about how Sean came at peace or however you think about what Bret Hart, how he views himself, they grew up enough to do this, and it's good for everybody because it's a hell of a story with these two guys. Like, it's a hell of a story to leave on DVD for everyone to watch, and having the most powerful company, it's probably going to be one of the only words about it, so that's kind of cool that it's the way it is.
Yeah, and in a business, like when they, everything is about like working the fans or working the boys or something like that. I mean, it's easy to say, well, maybe they're just like putting on a show about just being friends. But no, I legitimately believe they're like good friends now. So.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. I mean,
Britt's gone through, this whole Survivor Series thing. If you think Britt's gone through like so many stages of hell after Survivor Series, it's really an insignificant thing, in his life right now. I mean, his brother died, his parents are dead, Davey Boy Smith died, he had a stroke. I mean, that's, like, Montreal pales in comparison to stuff like that.
No. The whole family hates each other, basically. They're all divided,
Yeah.
So that's cool. So I guess that's it for the Bret Hart. Anything just off topic that you want to bring up before we end the show, Shim?
Nope. Just that Adam Summers and I are going to record Saturday morning. Finally, another big audio nightmare coming up. Les Thatcher, Rich Tate, and I every Wednesday on blogtalkradio.com, the Ringside Rap radio show. Go to ringsiderap.com there. And, of course, Wrestling Observer Live every Sunday, 6 to 8, on the Sports Byline Radio Network and WrestlingObserver.com, a show I know you love oh so much.
Yeah. Speaking of Les, do me a favor. I have a challenge for Les I'd like for you to pass on to him. And that
all
is,
right.
I'd like for him to see if he can to find or defend any wrestler on the WWE roster who sells better than Kermit the Frog.
Oh, Jesus. I'm not. You call in and ask him that because I don't. His head's going to explode. I'm not doing it. Can't do it.
Even if I have to agree that he's so better than everybody.
Actually, you know what? With how Les is viewing the product right now, he may actually agree with you. But I will ask him.
Cool. Is that what Les is getting his eyes done because of the state of wrestling that he's been forced to watch?
That's what I think. Yeah, I thought he was actually going to make himself, you know, fit the cataract. He was actually going to get patches inserted over him so you never have to see this shit again.
Real quick on this Brett and Sean DVD, I was kind of surprised that they don't have the Montreal match in here. I mean, they got it on the Blu-ray, but they don't on the regular one. I thought that was kind of weird.
Really?
Yeah, it's not on the regular DVD, the Montreal match. Well,
they kind of show enough of it during the documentary. I mean, but that
yeah.
is weird. You think it would be on there.
Especially if it's not like they would give him a reason to do the, like, some bullshit alternate commentary or some sort of wackiness like that with it.
It would have been awesome.
There.
They would have had Brendan Sean do the commentary to it. That would have been awesome.
Oh, you get to the
they
end.
They should
have
had a commentary to the match where the ropes broke.
Yeah.
Oh, the match in Indianapolis?
Yeah. And it was on the DVD. I mean, it looks so horrible. Brett's setting up, you know, like for the heart attack, and half of the ropes are gone. And so
and
he goes
trying to
one...
bounce off the half the rope.
Yeah, he goes to one rope, and he's going real slow. Then he goes to the other one and then kind of stops because there's no rope to bounce off of. So he just kind of turns around and does the clothesline. Looked terrible.
Yeah, he basically says that was the worst match he's pretty much ever been in, and he just despised that match.
Also on the DVD, just for the... For the extras, they also got Brett and Sean's Hall of Fame inductions, so which I had never seen in their entirety, so that was pretty cool.
Nice.
Well, you know, as much as I hate Hunter, I gotta say he was fucking awesome in that Hall of Fame induction of Sean.
Yeah,
that might have been the greatest
cool.
thing he ever did. When he talked about how Sean's got that Google eye and how he can shoot a duck with one hand and a squirrel in another hand, I fucking died.
Hey, you know, they did this. There's one thing people are like, well, Triple H in the Hall of Fame and stuff like that. And hey, yes, he could kill the entire wrestling business in like 20 years and stuff like that. And I understand it, but he is very good at what he does. And Shawn Michaels is his best goddamn friend. So, you know, even the most maniacal can be human sometimes.
Yeah. That probably, because I've been to what, 3 Hall of Fames now, so I guess I got to pick that as the best moment as far as, like, the best induction and acceptance speech. It was fucking awesome. But we'll go ahead and end the show, and everybody come back next week. I don't know if Craig has anything planned or not.
I'm going to watch a movie this evening, and I'm going to review it next week. I'm going to watch Human Centipede Part 2.
Oh, no.
Yes, oh, no, yes.
Now, wait, can I make a movie request for you to review on the show?
Sure.
And it's not going to be Torn as great as that would be, but the Kentucky Fried movie.
Oh, my God, I love that movie. I've never seen it in years.
That
movie is so awesome. if someone can find me a link to that movie somewhere, send it to me, please.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I think I actually had to create the movie on Facebook to actually like it. I think I actually had to type it in, and it's just like, because it wasn't even on. That is a great goddamn movie. The first movie the guys from Airplane and Naked Gun had done, it was right after right before they did the Naked Gun TV show, the Police Squad show.
I just remember being a little kid and getting to see a movie that was fucking a shitload of tits. There's that Bruce Lee imitation part that was fucking
just
awesome.
Yen.
I mean, that shit, dude, that's one of the greatest movies ever made that a lot of people don't know about.
Katrina, have you seen that?
No, I don't think so. I've heard of it, but I don't think I've seen it.
Oh, my God, just the opening part with Catholic high school girls in trouble, you will cream in your jeans when you're watching Catholic high school girls in trouble, a fantastic movie.
I was watching the trailer for this Human Centipede 2 because I watched the first one and I was interested for the next one that was coming out, and they were screening it. They were locking these people in these rooms where they were viewing it, and they had a bucket there for them to vomit in.
while they you know, while they watch the film. So I said, this side can't pass this up.
Well, I'll let you watch it.
He's
next
to 12 people this time instead of three. So
it's like a Saturday night at Ed's house.
Jeez.
And I'm going to get to Battlestar Galactica in a couple of days, Ed. I got hooked on, I'm on 100, on episode 185 of Frasier, and Niles and Daphne just finally got together, so I can't stop watching that.
Daphne, that's one underrated primetime piece of ass, dude.
You got to love an accent.
She's just awesome. I even remember her when she was on Benny Hill.
She was on Benny Hill?
She was one of the, like, Benny Hill girls. She, I mean, she wasn't, like, on every single episode, but she came out a couple times on Benny Hill.
Oh, man, was she ever topless? I always loved that, the British version of Benny Hill, when you see it. It was just like, man, look, boobies.
Right. I think the closest thing that, like, America might have had was Bizarre. Do you remember Bizarre?
I don't.
That's where, like, Super Dave Osborne kind of got his start. And, I forgot the name of the guy who was the host, but they had like a skit where they did like a family, and all the family were a different fucking race. Like you had the Irish dad, and then you had like a black son, and a Puerto Rican son, and a Mexican, and then you had the Jew daughter, and it was a Polish wife, and it was fucking awesome.
I wonder if John Laurinaitis is like he's imitating Super Dave Osborne when he speaks.
He kind of looks like him. He's like a jacked up version of Super Dave in a way.
Wait, well, Santino said, I just got a John Laurinaitis told me I had a match tonight. I said, how has nobody thought about that up until this point?
Yeah, that's a damn good point with his voice, too. And is it, I have not seen Curb Your Enthusiasm. I like the show, but I really haven't seen it in like a couple of years or at least a couple of seasons. Is the guy they're talking about, Funkhauser, is he played by Super Dave Osborne?
I don't know. I still haven't figured out what that reference is from. I mean, I hear it a lot on the promos, but, you know, much like the skateboard thing, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
It's from
yeah,
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I never really watched that show,
sure.
So I couldn't tell you.
I miss Super Dave Osborne. There's another show I wish would come back. Show the reruns of that. That always made me laugh, too.
Well, go back and see if you can find any of this show Bizarre, because that's where he got his start. That's where he did all his first skits. I mean, he did like every episode he was getting blown up or something. It was an awesome little. It was on Showtime, and it was like a 30-minute like little TV show, and it was fucking awesome.
I have to get, because I remember his show on Showtime. What was his sidekick, Fiji, or he had a little Japanese sidekick?
Oh fuck, I can't remember now.
Oh, I can't remember his name. It was something. It was like Fuji or something. Where it was like there was a product out because at the time too. I just remember that's what it was. It wasn't Honda, but you know, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, basically, Super Dave was a spinoff from the show Bizarre that I'm talking about. But anyway, we will be back next week, same time, and if we don't have a guest, maybe we'll talk about. What if in this day and wrestling didn't happen, or whatever? I guess that's a good topic. So we'll talk back. Chef, thanks for doing the show, even though you're still a jerk and you were wrongfully given my job that was rightfully should be given to me. And
what if we had never started this show? We'd probably all be a lot happier.
Probably. Let's go ahead and we'll leave you with this.
In the golden age of television, our guest star earned the title of Mr. Television, and he deserves it to this day. Here he is, the incomparable Milton Berle.
Thank you, and good evening. And I want to thank you, Kermit. Thank you for your wonderful introduction. First time I've ever been introduced by an amphibious MC. Because you know what amphibious means. It means he can be dull on land or water. I feel great. I really feel wonderful. I just got back from a pleasure trip. I took my mother-in-law to the airport. And while I was there...
Funny!
I heard about them. It's beginning. You're the two guys that I heard about that heckle from the box, aren't you? There they are, ladies and gentlemen. Get a look at them. Starsky and Crutch. Yeah, don't start with me, boys. Don't start with me, please.
Hey, Burl.
What?
You know what? I've just figured out your style.
Really?
You work like Gregory Peck.
Gregory Peck's not a comedian.
Well?
Now, just a minute, please. I have been a successful comedian half of my life.
How come we got this half?
Look, did you come in here to be entertained or not?
That's right.
What's right?
We came in here to be entertained, and we're not.
Yeah? I'd like to see you come down here and be funny.
You first!
The audience. Don't pay any attention to him, folks. He's the ninth child of a family of eight. Let me tell this story.
Hey, Burl!
Oh, guess what is it? What is it?
You know what you're doing wrong?
What am I doing wrong?
You're standing too close to the audience.
Oh, yeah? How's this?
You're still too close.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this okay?
Yeah, a little more.
How far back do I want to go?
You got a car?
Let me tell you something. If you don't stop, I'll have the usher throw you out.
He can't. He's too busy.
Doing what?
Keeping people in.
And you're encouraging. You know what? I got a good mind to punch you in your nose.
Please, not while I'm holding it.
That's pretty funny.
You can use it.
I don't need your material, pal. I got a million funny lines in the back of my head.
Yeah, how come they never reach your mouth?
Gentlemen, would you please? Would you take it easy? Do you think I'm doing this for fun?
Not so far.
Oh, I see. You think you can do better?
I couldn't do worse.
All right. Okay. I dare you both to come down here and entertain.
We should.
Oh, yeah? Do you sing?
No.
Do you dance?
No.
Can you get laughs?
No.
Then what would you do?
Just what you're doing.
Okay, that's it. That's it. I'm going to call the police.
Good idea. You need all the protection you can get.
Don't, will you? I've had it with you guys. I'm not going to put up with you anymore. Not anymore.
Hey, how's it going, Mr. Burr?
Oh, I'm going to start with you now. How's it going? It's gone terribly. These guys have been picking on me, insulting me ever since I started.
Well, can I help you out?
Please, huh?
Which way did you come in?
I've had it. Here we go again.